Well, turn back, if you would, to Psalm 77. It's got it there open in front of you. The psalm we're going to be looking at this morning. We've been making our way through some of these psalms this summer, as we've done quite a few summers before. And we're in the middle of a section of the Psalms of Asaph. And we have this one we're looking at this morning. But it was written in the night time, did you notice? Verse 6, I will call to remembrance my song in the night. And so that's the title I've given it this morning, My Song in the Night. Asaph has had a troubled night. A troubled night's sleep, in the sense he hasn't been sleeping. He hasn't been sleeping, he's been up all night. Maybe that's been your experience. Maybe even recently you've had a bad night when you've been unable to sleep. Maybe that could be all for all kinds of reasons. It was just you drank coffee too late or something like that, and so you can't sleep. But it's more than that. Sometimes it can be that we're awake because we're troubled. Our minds are worrying. We're worried about something that's meant to be happening the next day, or rehashing something that's happened that day, whatever it is, and we're kept awake. Well, maybe Asaph's psalm might be a helpful one for us to consider this morning. He tells in verse 6 his song in the night. In verse 2 he tells us again that my hand was stretched out in the night. And this night was one. And he tries to pray. He says in verse 1, I cried to the Lord with my voice, to God with my voice. And he did give ear to me. God does hear, perhaps more of that later in the psalm. Perhaps at the beginning he just feels like he's praying and nothing much has happened. As he said in verse 2, he talks about my hand was stretched out in the night without ceasing. That was a gesture Jewish people often made in those days of praying. They lifted up their hands to pray. And he says, I've lifted up my hands all night. I've been awake all night praying. But there is no comfort. End of verse 2, my soul refused to be comforted. There was nothing that really helped, nothing that consoled me, nothing that helped me, nothing that brought sympathy to me. And then verse 3 probably gets even weirder. I remembered God and was troubled. Thinking of God just seemed to make things worse. Thinking of God, trying to remember things about him, just troubled him even more. And at the end of verse 3, you have this little word, Selah. It's just always just written down like that because we don't know what it exactly means. Most people's hunches it probably is a pause. That maybe there was an instrumental interlude in the psalm when people were singing it in the temple. Maybe that was meant to sing up to this point. And now just think about that. Just think about that for a moment. There's Asaph's song in the night. He feels overwhelmed, he says. My spirit was overwhelmed. Just felt like I was drowning. Felt like I was in the sea. All of these waves just coming over me. My spirit, my soul is just overwhelmed. Later on in verse 10, he talks about my anguish. In verse 4, he talks about the fact that he can't sleep. You hold my eyelids open. It's almost, God, you're doing this. You're keeping me awake. I'm so troubled. I'm so worked up. I can't speak. I don't even know the right things to say anymore. Whether he wrote the psalm that night, or whether he got up from bed and went and sat down at the piano, I don't know. I said, right, let's try and write something out. I don't know. Whether he maybe penned some words down, a sheet of paper by his bed, thought, I can't sleep, let's just write down some things. Maybe he wrote it down later on, I don't know. Of course, inspired by the Holy Spirit, he does in the end write this. Such a personal psalm, isn't it? Similar to some other ones we've had of Asaph before. And he wrote this psalm in the end. We hadn't had time this morning, actually, to sing it. Often we try most weeks to try and sing the psalm as well, but not quite time with communion this morning. But what tune would you think it should go to? Quite a sad song, isn't it? Quite a poignant, melancholy tune. What's going on? We don't know. Asaph doesn't really say. He just talks about these days of trouble and that he's overwhelmed, that he's in anguish, but he doesn't say what it was. Maybe it was some personal tragedy he had suffered. Maybe it was some situation in his life that had brought fear or anxiety, leaving him disillusioned and doubting. Certainly seems to be the kind of thing Asaph sometimes did struggle with. Look back at one of his other Psalms, 73, where he says in verse 2, "As for me, my feet had almost stumbled, my steps had nearly slipped, for I was envious of the boastful when I saw the prosperity of the wicked." He does seem to have gone through other troubles when he was really disillusioned and doubting and confused. Maybe it was something like that. Maybe it was a national trouble that was coming into the country at that time. A little bit like Psalm 74. Again, just a couple back, the first couple of verses. "Oh God, why have you cast us off forever? Why does your anger smote against the sheep of your pasture, your people? Remember your congregation you purchased of old, the tribe of your inheritance, Mount Zion where you dwell." So, it could be that too. What was going on in this time of trouble that came to Asaph, we don't know. It sounds quite similar to books, parts of Lamentations. Sounds quite similar to a little bit of Ezekiel and Jeremiah, who wrote in the time of the exile. And so we've noticed before some of Asaph's Psalms, we're not 100% certain whether it is Asaph personally, who is about the same time as David, or whether it was the sons of Asaph, who are referred to later on in the Bible, who were still carrying on the music in the temple, even at the time of the fall of to Babylon and so on. So maybe it was written by them at that time, we don't know. Or whether it was written by Asaph in other situations he was facing too, we don't know for certain. But maybe we're not told it for a reason. Because then you are left with this psalm that just echoes on with its melancholy tune that resonates with us sometimes. And maybe it doesn't matter what Asaph's trouble was, for sometimes our troubles, which might be different from his, seem to still lead us to this psalm. And maybe they should lead us to this psalm. How do we respond in times of trouble? How do we respond to them? When we are having trouble sleeping, when we are worried and frightened and anxious or whatever it might be. We're told of Asaph, "I cried to the Lord." He sought after God. And that's a healthy thing to do. Maybe we're more prone to one of the more unhealthy ways of responding. Maybe just denial. We just pretend nothing's happening at all. We just don't accept the faith, the situation at face value. We just deny it. Sometimes we just try and distract ourselves. Maybe we need another idle escape. Maybe just some other way. I've got these big things going on. Oh, but let's just head out to the cinema. Let's just do this, that, and the other. Keep myself busy. Not thinking about the serious things. Some people head to drink or something like that to try and switch off the mind and the way it's thinking. Some people are driven into despair. Some people are driven into a grumpy character. They're whinging and complaining it to everyone. They never talk to God about it. They whinge to everyone else. Angry and bitter. Well, how we respond to times of trouble. They're going to happen. Maybe you're going through them at the moment. They're bound to happen at some point. Different points in our lives. Whereas Asaph has some words of wisdom. Times of trouble should be times of prayer. That's what he says in verse 1. "I cried out to the Lord with my voice. To God with my voice. I sought the Lord in the days of my trouble." Verse 2. Is that what we can say? Or have we got one of those other responses we're more prone to? "In the days of trouble, I sought the Lord." That's the right place to go. That's the right thing to do. Maybe you can write your own song in the night. Or at least pray. And Asaph had his psalm written down so that you could borrow his. If Asaph is a better poet than you, then use his. If you're up all night, maybe even in this week ahead, turn back to Psalm 77. If you're struggling to sleep because you've got too much on your mind and one thing or another, come to a song in the night and pray like Asaph did. When there's tragedy, when there's sadness, when there's suffering, whatever it is, let's remember a psalm like this. Well, what to begin to do? That's the beginning bit, up to that first pause at Selah at end of verse 3 or so. Well, let's carry on from verse 5. He begins to think, I have considered the days of old, the years of ancient times. I call to remembrance my song in the night. I meditate within my heart. My spirit makes a diligent search. Asaph tries to think. And he can't perhaps make sense of the present, the things that are going on, but he thinks instead about the past. That's often a biblical strategy, isn't it? Maybe we can't make head or tail of what's going on at the moment. But he says, well, I'll think of the days of old, the years of ancient times. I'll think about some of those things. And maybe thinking about those past occasions will bring some help then. And so in verse 6, he talks about remembering and meditating and searching. And those are wise steps that Asaph had. Maybe, I don't know, he comes up with this phrase twice. Verse 5, the days of old, and then the years of ancient times. And then he does it again in verse 10. He says, I remember the years of the ancient, the right hand of the Most High. And then verse 11, surely I remember the wonders, and it should be in the days of old. He uses the phrase again, the days and the years. Maybe he's deliberately using both of those to think of recent history, recent past, and the years of ancient time, of course, longer ago. Maybe those can be helpful things. Maybe if we're hitting a problem at the moment and we can't make sense of things, maybe we can reflect on what God has done in our days, in the recent history, as it were, of things we've experienced. Maybe going back into the years of ancient times and thinking of what God has done in the past, and especially in his word and so on. So that's where Asaph begins to go. And he's going to go there a bit more later on in the psalm, but before he gets there, he hits a bit of a snag. And we're in verse 7 to 9. Asaph hits another problem. As he begins to remember and begins to meditate on the things of the past, it seems to bring to mind a series of questions, verses 7 to 9, which are listed for us. And so the second thing we notice with Asaph is his wrestling with unanswered questions. As he tries to think constructively about other times, but in the end he's rather haunted in some ways by some questions. Verse 7, there's 6 questions, two in each verse that then follows. And maybe the thing that's going on is he's thinking, well, why isn't God doing the same thing again? He remembers these things in the times of old. Maybe that sort of raises some more optimistic thoughts. But then he's saying, but why isn't that happening now? And so he's got these questions, these 6 questions. Verse 7, will the Lord cast off forever? Second bit of verse 7, will he be favourable no more? Verse 8, has his mercy ceased forever? Second bit, has his promise failed forevermore? On into verse 9, has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he in anger shut up his tender mercies? And so Asaph's got these 6 questions that are buzzing round his head. Notice we get another Selah at this point. Another pause. These questions buzz round in his mind. Will God cast us off forever? Will there be no more favour from him? Has his mercy ceased? Has his promises failed? Has he forgotten to be gracious? Is he so angry with us that he's now shut up his compassion? These questions are going round and round. We don't know, as I say, whether this is a personal thing, or whether he's sort of thinking about the situations he's going through, whether it's terms of personal tragedy or suffering. And these questions are coming round. Notice in the questions, he hasn't cast me off or cast us off either. They don't really have that person bit in it. They're just sort of matter-of-fact things. Again, perhaps, with the idea it sort of applies in different ways, isn't it? Maybe facing a national situation, those questions still resonate the same, don't they? I wonder if you've had any questions like that buzzing around your head when you can't sleep, when you're waiting to see the doctor the following day and you wonder what the news will be, when you've got something you've got to see, meet your boss about something, wondering whether you're being shown the door, you know, whatever it is. And all these questions go around in our minds and we begin to think, well, is God not merciful to me anymore? Is that it? Have I done something to anger him? Is there no more compassion? What's going on? Well, we've got these six questions in three verses. Do you know the answer to them? The way he's phrased them all, they all have the same answer, don't they? And they all have the answer, no. And no doubt you could think of some places in the Bible you could turn to with Asaph and say, no, Asaph, there's an answer in the Bible. And you could think of some. But here there are no answers. Asaph could have done. It would almost be tidier if he did. If inspired by the Holy Spirit, Asaph then wrote a bit more about the answers to those questions. But he doesn't. And I was wondering why that might be as I was thinking this through in the week. Maybe we can answer them now, on a Sunday morning, when the sun's shining, when we've got our Bibles in front of us. Maybe we can think really carefully about the answers to those questions. But sometimes when you're up all night and they're just buzzing around your head, you can't. Like Asaph. And you've got to love Asaph's psalms here in the middle of the book for their messiness. Asaph often writes a messy psalm. It isn't nice and theological with all the T's crossed and all the I's dotted and just perfect. I mean, write a psalm in the middle of the night that's messy, that doesn't answer all the questions, that shows us something of Asaph's wrestlings. Because that's real life, isn't it? We don't just want to laugh daft little ditty about there being blue skies over the blue cliffs of Dover or something. That doesn't help us in the middle of the night. But Asaph tells us what he's really going through. And sometimes we need to face that too, when we've got those unanswered questions. It's okay to come to God with a messy prayer. He's not offended by Asaph's questions. God made sure they are inspired to be written forevermore. God is not put off by your questions. When you're feeling low, feeling you're despairing, whatever it might be, and you come to God and pour out your heart, you don't have to make it all neat and tidy. You can come to God and just say, God, this situation I'm facing at the moment, it sucks. I don't know what to do. I'm facing this problem or that problem, and I can't make head or tail of it. It feels like you've abandoned me. It feels like your mercies have ceased. I can't understand it. God is not offended. God is not offended by Asaph's honesty, and nor by ours. We can be honest with God. We don't have to pretend we've got everything sorted when we clearly have not. And maybe also, this is a good reminder that when you're helping somebody else who's suffering, you might not need to give all the answers either. Think of Job's friends. And when the tragedy he was going through and a fair number of questions that he was asking too, his friends came and sat with him in the ashes. And they sat there and sympathized with him in silence. And that was the best thing they ever did. Then they thought they should try and answer the questions. And that's when it went wrong. And maybe we need to be the same as Christians, coming alongside somebody who's struggling. Don't try and answer all the questions. Mourn with those who mourn. Sit up with somebody who's awake all night and be with them. Don't try and answer it all. Well, heading on towards the end, Asaph asks his questions. Then you get another pause, Selah, there written. But Asaph does carry on, and in verse 10, as we've noticed, similar to verse 5, he returns to that same thought of thinking back of the past. And verse 10 is a bit hard to translate. I said, this is my anguish. We've then got in italics. That's just a bit that's inserted to try and make it make more sense. I will remember the years of the right hand of the Most High. It's a bit hard to translate exactly where he's going with that. But verse 11 is much easier. I will remember the works of the Lord. I'll remember your wonders of old. And so that's why they've sort of said, well, probably means the same sort of thing going back a verse. In verse 10, I'll remember the years of the right hand of the Most High. And so in our New King James, we've got three repeats of I will remember. I will remember. Just like he said he would try and do in verse 10, verse 7, verse 5, again. Verse 5, he said he was going to try and do it before he then hit another snag. But he comes back to it in verse 10 and 11. And in his situation, and he's sleepless, despairing, he says, I'm going to remember. I'm going to remember the things that God has done. I'm going to remember his works, verse 11. I'm going to remember his wonders. Verse 12, I'll meditate on your work and talk of your deeds. So I'm going to talk these things through. Maybe he's just going to talk to himself. Sometimes that happens in the middle of the night if we're awake. And Asaph does it. He says, I'm going to talk to myself of things I remember about God. And as we said, in this situation he's in at the moment, he can't make head or tail of it. But he thinks, well, what about these other situations that I can think of from the past? I'll think of God's deeds and what God has done before, his wonders and his works. And maybe that will help. And so the third thing is remembering our history, remembering our salvation history. There is Asaph, and he thinks back of these things, of God's deeds and God's work, the things he's done before. And he looks back at those things, hoping that they might help him now in the present. And although his circumstances don't change, by looking to God, he changes. Asaph changes. And again, that may help us. When we get so self-absorbed and get so sort of myopic, just thinking about this immediate situation we're facing, we lose part of the bigger picture, don't we? Our thinking back across our days of the things God has done for us in our past. Or thinking back through history, thinking back through the Bible of how God has helped before. We can go back to those things. And that doesn't necessarily mean our situation changes, but it changes our reflection. It changes our minds. It changes our character. And one other thing happens. Asaph stops talking about God and starts talking to God. Just like he said he would do in the first verse, I cry to you. Now he actually does it, sort of halfway through verse 13. Your way, O God, is in the sanctuary. Who great is a God as our God? You are the God who does wonders. And from then on, it's always you. You do this, you do that. He's now talking to God. Again, what a helpful thing it is. So just as we work towards the end, Asaph thinks of God's greatness, his wonder, his strength, of how he redeemed his people. You're the God who does wonders, verse 14. You're the God with strength. You're the one who redeems your people, verse 15. And that's what Asaph begins to think of. Asaph goes back through history and he focuses on the Red Sea, the biggest thing that happens in the Old Testament. They're always going back to it in the Psalms. Asaph goes back to that massive act of how God rescued them through the waters. He's quite poetic in describing this great big storm in the book of Exodus. It's only a wind that's referenced, but here, inspired by God, he makes it more poetic and dramatic as well as he describes those things that happened, maybe sort of mixing in other things as well, other situations when God intervened in other parts of their history too. And he thinks of God's rescue, of how God provided a way through the sea. And that's what he says, verse 19. Your way was in the sea, your path in the great waters. And it's a lovely little conclusion to the psalm, isn't it? With, at the same time, noticing there in history how God rescued his people, but still how it was quite a strange thing. End of verse 19, your footsteps were not known. And there's this reference in verse 13, your way, O God, is in the sanctuary. Your way is in the holy place, heaven. That's where your ways are. And so maybe we're always a little bit unsure exactly what God is doing, because your footsteps are not known. God does do mysterious things. But God did provide a way through the sea. And that works as a nice metaphor, doesn't it? Could God provide a way through the sea for Asaph now? The sea of swirling emotions and trouble he was in, God makes a way through the sea. It works as a metaphor, doesn't it, as well, of that which happened in there in Israel's past, and Asaph's hope God could do the same again. Remembering the past helps Asaph in the present. So Asaph traces his history back to the Red Sea. He wasn't actually alive then, but he goes back through the Israelites' history to it. And as Christians, we trace our history, as it were, back to the ultimate event that's revealed to us, the cross. That's where we go. We go to remember. Three times Asaph says it. Jesus says it twice in the Last Supper. That's what we're meant to do. When you're up all night, think of the past, go back through your history and how God has helped you in the past, how God saved you and taught you things. Go back through history to the cross, and we discover there the unchanging truth. And if God should not spare his own son, how will he not do give all things for us? What could stand against us? Again, in Romans chapter 8, for example. And that's our hope, isn't it? Remembering our history, remembering the past, can help us now in the present. And maybe God will provide a way through the sea for us too. And just in finishing, Asaph's got one more verse. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. Asaph finishes with a shepherd. Says he looks back in God bringing them through the Red Sea and then off through the wilderness and so on. That God shepherded his people. And that's the last words in the psalm. Asaph doesn't tell us any more. But maybe in those thoughts of the Bible, he then started to meditate on that. God the shepherd. And that is a good place to finish, isn't it? Whether Asaph dozed off at this point, I don't know. I'm quite allowed to say that. He finishes his psalm, he meditates on God the shepherd. Maybe God brought sleep. At that point, that the song in the night could come to an end. But it is a good place for us to end up, isn't it? The questions weren't answered. The trouble was not instantly evaporated. But Asaph maybe could go to sleep, trusting in a shepherd. He led his people like a flock, and Asaph's hope was that God would lead him too. And maybe that can help us get some sleep. When you're up all night, go, well, I've got a shepherd. I don't know what's going on. I don't know where I am. I don't know what this path is that my shepherd is taking me through. But at least I have a shepherd. And maybe that can bring some comfort. And he thinks he shepherded, God shepherded with Moses and Aaron, the prophet and the priest in the book of Exodus. And for us too, we think back to the cross. We think to our shepherd, a prophet, a priest, a king, Jesus, who's with us. And maybe the problems haven't gone away. But that's a good place for us to find hope. Not all the answers, no. But hope enough to carry on being led by our shepherd, just as Asaph closes his psalm. And maybe a psalm that helps us. Maybe this week you'll need it. One time in the night. Maybe some point in the future. But turn to Psalm 77. A psalm in the night. And of the hope that Asaph found in a shepherd.